tiros en el arco, la defensa es colosal. González, Orlando, La Torre, Nicolás Fuentes y Chumpitas, Chale, Mifflin y Cubillas, y el gran Perico León, Bailón y Alberto Gallardo.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Peruvian Waltz. And remarkably, we have something to celebrate here, and we're delighted to be discussing the Copa Sudamericana. I'm here with Kevin and Renato. Kevin, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. I'm ecstatic for all the good news that we finally have to show to bring to you guys.
Fantastic. And Renato, how are you, mate?
I mean, after few nights ago, with a certain result, I was a little like just all over the place. But I mean, after yesterday, after this recording, I mean, I'm just like enjoying it.
It was absolutely incredible coming into those last few minutes last night with Melgar against Cuiabá and Racing against River Plate. We needed Racing to lose, and we needed to win. And getting towards the end of that game when River Plate score, it was absolutely incredible just for the sheer fact of how much Racing dominated that game. Looking at the stats, they had 28 shots, 75% possession. And with that, just that 25% possession, River Plate managed to get that 66th minute goal. And Racing had no response. Kevin, what was going through your mind as you're getting the updates and watching these games?
I mean, to me, everything was just crazy. I think River Plate scored in the second half when Melgar was tied, I believe. So it was like, you know, Melgar has started subs. They had gone up. Then they tied with Cuiabá. Then all of a sudden, River Plate out of nowhere, you know, starts beating Racing, and I think, you know, shortly after, Melgar gets the memo and they're like, okay, we got to make some moves. We got to put in Cuesta. We got to put in Arias. We got to put in Reina. And they, you know, Borda Cajar, the man of the match. And it was just so dynamic. Anyone that was following that live was probably just like on the edge of their seats, because they didn't know anything could happen. And thankfully, it was not one of those nights, and Melgar got the job done at home. And then River did their part in Argentina, and it all went clear as it could be.
Incredible. Was it absolutely incredible? And Renato, like, Melgar stayed in the game to start with. And we waited to that sort of 66th minute when the goal went in at Racing to get that little nudge of, yeah, there's still a chance here now, which we probably didn't think before the game.
Yeah, it's that whole result was just crazy. I mean, at first you had the impression that Melgar was like, maybe like Mr. Lorenzo wanted to like to save all the Melgar players for their upcoming match, as this recording is Universitario, you know, to stay on top in the current Liga 1 table. But I guess when they realized that they've been hearing that Racing are losing, Nestor Lorenzo brought in players, most of his starting team, and like try like to get the result. And with their like with the hard work they put in, like Melgar got what they need, like a 3-1 result. And I'd say some changes, like interesting changes, came in. Like one of the changes was Genji Cabrera, who is Melgar Youth Academy product. I gotta say that I've been getting more impressed with him as each game goes by when he plays. Like, I think he does play like as a left winger, but I do see some obvious differences between Genji Cabrera and Luis Iberico, that Iberico is more of your hard, like hard work, tactical base winger, while Cabrera is your like normal like Peruvian winger who will be emphasized on like technique and passing. But some of the passes he's been giving was really nice. And I'm pretty sure like one of he gave an assist for Borja Cajar's second goal with Melgar. And Borja Cajar was also an impact sub as well for Melgar to win. And thankfully, River Plate, the Uruguay, managed to do like a favor for Melgar to beat Racing. And I say that, thankfully, Melgar had a higher goal difference, and there in the Copa Sudamericana round of 16. And with the way it's been, I feel like maybe they can even go far throughout the tournament. Like, the one thing Melgar is showing me is that they will compete. Like, they don't care who their opponent is, as long as they got the right tactics, they got the right mentality, they got the right players. They will, like, do their best, and, like, Nestor Lorenzo will, like, push the max to his players. The fact that even, like, Melgar beat Racing away, like, at home, and we're talking about an informed Racing, considered right now one of the most informed teams in Argentina. 3-1, like, win. Like, that's just a result. And to say that Melgar is also an Altura team, I think it's just, like, BS, because, like, Melgar is a great team because they have the, like, the winning mentality. And I feel like that's what many clubs in Peru need to take note from them. You need a great sporting project, great players, an ambitious and serious manager, and the right mentality to win. No, like, with a low self-esteem.
The game beforehand, maybe obviously we went over to Argentina, and Racing went down to 10 men very early and ended up winning. It seemed really hard to imagine that anything could come of this. And Kevin, watching the game, I think just before, a little while before Archimbald got on the score sheet once again, after he was the one that rescued the 3 points against River Plate away, at home, sorry. He could have given away a penalty, I thought, as well. And there was a handball, a cross came in, he had his hand out in a weird position. That was close. I think that was started to be the signs of a bit of luck coming towards Melgar in that game. And then Archimbald goes and scores. He's had a pretty decent role in this Sudamericana campaign so far.
Yeah, they may have had, Melgar may have had a little bit of that suerte del campeón, as they say. you know, I'm not trying to say that they're gonna, you know, go all the way. I'm just saying that, you know, finally you see a team where things just, everything went their way. Yeah, that was a handball, but I don't think, you know, Cuiaba did anything further to really be like, oh, we should have won this match. I think they already knew that they were eliminated from the start. And Brazilian teams kind of struggle in Peru and in general. So I think it was good. It was very good for Melgar. It was very good for Archimbald, who when he first signed, I was like, you know, maybe he shouldn't have come. Maybe he's just Rayent like filler. But he keeps changing my mind. He's like, he comes in as an impact. He scores. He starts a game. He scores. He's being dynamic on the team. He's showing that form that he had in Muni that got him to Melgar, and it's definitely good. Melgar is solid, and more important than just having a bench, they know how to use it. Like, okay, we could say that they started subs, but I mean their subs were Kevin Quevedo, probably one of the players with the best one-on-one in the Peruvian league. He had like 19 goals like two seasons back. Solid guy. Johnny Vidales, I think he was like the top scorer for Melgar last year in Liga Uno. Iberico, called up for national team, top goal scorer for the Peruvian league, even though he's a regular starter. Guedes, I think he kind of carried San Martin last year in the Apertura. So these are subs that They make a difference, not just in the Peruvian league, but here internationally, as is showing. And you know, it's not like they made 20 signings or anything. Quevedo was there last season. Vidales was there last season. Guedes was new. Archimbald was new. And they knew how to use them. They didn't, you know, force them into the squad. They're like, all right, this game, it works. This game, maybe you're off the bench. And there's been just such solidarity from Melgar that I'm really excited to see how far they can go.
That's right. Yeah, there's it's that thing about how well, in comparison to probably every other club in Peru, arguably say that you can look around their squad and you say, yeah, they made a lot of changes, but they are first team players. They are a full squad of first team players almost. There's no looking at their team thinking, oh yeah, they've given up on this one and they've put out the B team. It's they're really good, a really good example of how well you can do on the budget they're on, and to be able to go and compete with sides from other countries around South America, and to be able to compete well and to get through this group is a great achievement. And we go on, they've got Colombian Company next, haven't they, in the next round, Renato?
Yeah, Deportivo Cali, that's going to be Melgar's next opponent in Copa Sudamericana in the round of 16. We got to say something on Deportivo Cali is that this is a team that has recently beat Boca in Libertadores, and I think in their group stage, they look quite a surprise considering how they were in a difficult group that contained Boca Juniors and Corinthians. Although I will say at the same time, looking at their current form in the Colombian League, it looks inconsistent at best, where maybe they'll win one game, they'll draw or even lose a game all over the place. So you kind of get the feeling they do seem a bit lost in terms of how they are. But I'm not going to say that they're also like someone like to not be like underestimated, or we're going to keep in mind that Deportivo Cali is also coached by like Rafael Dudamel. They also have players like Teofilo Gutierrez, who was a top player in Colombia last season. And he's already got like a history with the Colombian national team, and he believe played in the 2014 World Cup with Colombia, correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah, it's going to be a tough opponent, quote unquote, but I'm not going to say it's going to be impossible for Melgar to beat, because the one thing I do like about Melgar is that they take great like full advantage of their home. Like they have like seemed to have won almost all of their home games this year, and I think in international competition they were like almost undefeated at home. But even then, like, you're also seeing Melgar like trying to compete well even away from home. Like, arguably they should have like beaten Cobia in Brazil, where Melgar had like a bunch of chances to score. Fortunately, bad finishing was what killed Melgar rather than just like them not playing well. And even like when they were playing Racing away, like, you saw that Melgar were putting a fight against Racing, and Racing had to go full on defensive mode once they had a player sent off. So I do think the Melgar can get the job done. Plus, I know this isn't the first time Melgar has faced a Colombian team. They faced Colombian teams not like many times. In fact, recently, as of late, I think a few years ago, in 2019, I believe, they defeated Atlético Junior of Colombia twice, at home and away. And keep in mind, that junior team had players like Luis Diaz. They had Victor Cantillo. I believe they had also like Teofilo Gutierrez, who was still right now at Cali, but he was still really good at junior. So, and I think that at the same time, that junior team went to the Copa Sudamericana final like not long ago. So, yeah, I do think Melgar can get a chance to beat Cali. I just think it depends on all of them, and I just hope that they get the game plans right.
Definitely, it's going to be an exciting one. Exciting one in the next round, and nice, a good test for Melgar. And Kevin, let's give a little shout out to Ayacucho as well. I think with the one win and the draw in their group, a difficult group in Group D, Sao Paulo going through top unbeaten, Everton from Chile. Just above them in second place. But it was a decent showing, I thought, from Ayacucho, who we didn't really expect much, but they came out and in most of the games they looked to try and compete as much as possible throughout.
Yes, I definitely think Ayacucho did more than I expected, and more than what their standings in the group say. Personally, you know, they got robbed of their home field advantage against Sao Paulo in the first match, where it was randomly moved from Cusco to Lima for an issue that had nothing to do with neither Cusco or Lima, and had a great match against Sao Paulo. It really showed off Techera, and now away against Sao Paulo, they also didn't, you know, get wrecked or anything like that. It was a 1-0 loss, respectable. They fought, you know, throughout the whole match, even though they had nothing to fight for. I think that's one of the most important things there. Call that vergüenza deportivo. they respect themselves. They respect their fans, their team, and it showed. It showed. I'm happy for Ayacucho, and if they make it again to the Sudamericana, I think, you know, they'll have more experience. Maybe they'll have more budget to invest in maybe defense or something. But they're starting to get their experience and push forward.
That's what we want to see, isn't it, from our from the other sides who aren't competing too often up the top of the table, and that they're building something to then challenge a bit more regularly. And Ayacucho, exciting team to watch domestically, and have been in the Sudamericana mostly. I think it was one of the Everton games they had where they were just completely outplayed and didn't seem to know how to get in the game. But otherwise, it was very promising. So let's move on, and we'll briefly, for our own sanity's sake, discuss the Libertadores. Renato, we'll start with your guys, Sporting Cristal, going down out of the group, bottom of the table, with just the 1 point. It wasn't a great campaign. 2 points. Two draws. It wasn't a great campaign. Goals were an issue, only scoring three. Defensively, I thought Sporting Cristal were decent throughout. Came up against some very difficult sides. Flamengo, Talleres, domestically aren't playing great, but they've got the quality there. And players like Jesus Castillo and some others really showed promise, but it's the number nine that was the issue, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, this Libertadores campaign was just lousy at best. I mean, no, I won't. I'm not gonna go too negative, because I think with how poorly reinforced Cristal were, and also but at the same time, I do know they got a great squad, but with a mix of just bad playing, where some of the reinforcements have not been working out well. The lack of a number nine, after we all know how bad Jairo Mosquera was, and that fact that he was terminated, just says a lot of how poor recruitment has been done at Sporting Cristal. Not to mention, there's also a feel of disconnect with the current owners and the players at Sporting Cristal. You just get the feeling that just things were just poorly planned. But I also think it just has to be a fact, also made bad tactics of Roberto Mosquera, where sometimes you feel he's just very predictable when it comes to his organization. And also sometimes he just makes some very questionable decisions when placing players on the front line. But as again, really the lack of a nine killed Sporting Cristal. And even Conchita in an interview after Flamengo, he mentioned that they needed a nine to score. And that's why they were kept losing a lot of chances during the tournament. Now, there are some positives I can get from Sporting Cristal. As you mentioned, Jesus Castillo, I'd say he was Cristal's best player in Libertadores, no doubt. I think even more than Yotun. Because when Jesus Castillo offers you something different that you see from that, more than what you see from your average midfielder in Peru. He has great physique. He's great when he has the ball on his feet. He knows how to distribute the ball quite well. But also you see a lot of something of that destroyer type midfielder, where he would try to steal the ball from someone and even try to use a bit of technique to pass the ball. The way you could say his game style is quite similar to Renato Tapia. And the fact that Jesus Castillo has been linked to Club Brugge in Belgium, I wouldn't be surprised if Jesus Castillo is going to be leaving Cristal this upcoming transfer window. Would it be Club Brugge? Who knows? I believe maybe there could be more clubs going after Jesus Castillo. I just hope that they can leave some good money for Cristal, and that the project is good for Jesus Castillo. Also, Yoshimar Yotun was showing why he's considered a national team player. And it was a shame that this Cristal campaign was just poor, that not even Yoshimar Yotun itself was enough. But I just hope that he stays throughout the rest of the year instead of just leaving mid-year. Same thing goes for Conchita Gonzalez. I mean, who knows if he will stay in Peru, because he's already been linked with Vélez, but he does show you why he's considered the best player in Peru. As for Sporting Cristal, I think now all focus must be going to Liga One. Fortunately, just this year wasn't our year for Libertadores, and we just gotta like make sure we win the league and just hope for a restart, whether if not Mosqueda stays or not, and see if like the new owners can like try to fix things that due to a disconnect between not just like the players but also the fans.
Yeah, Kevin, obviously Renato's a Sporting Cristal fan, and it can be tougher to take as a non-Cristal fan. For myself, I enjoyed elements of what they did, but yeah, it just didn't quite click going forward. Unfortunately, do you just see this as a disappointing results for Cristal? But in essence, they've got some bits right, or is it as poor as Cristal fans are feeling right now?
Let's see. Results wise, is definitely poor. There's no excusing that. As far as experience wise, you know, you got to see Castillo, Lisa got to start a couple of games. I think even Grimaldo got some minutes, but it's tough because I think I tweeted this at one point. I'm like, you know, Cristal fans are mad that Lisa is their starting nine or winger or whatever when he started. And I'm like, yeah, that's fair. He maybe didn't have the greatest, but this shouldn't have been his first Libertadores. This should have been like his third, at least, because it's not like Cristal had some crazy number nine that overshadowed him. I think they had, you know, they had Riquelme, who was okay, Mosquera, who was bad. I think before that, Chori Palacios or Herrera was hurt. It was something like that. And so this shouldn't have been his first. It was my real complaint as a neutral, because he has potential. You know, Castillo has potential. I think they grew a little bit in the Libertadores, but it doesn't show on the table at all. And then what was damning was that they didn't get the win over a Católica that's fighting relegation when Cristal was at home. I think that's the worst part, because if not, they'd be in Sudamericana right now. And then, you know, everyone could have been like, you know, it was okay. It wasn't great, but it was okay. So going from that, I think they have a lot of players with a lot of potential. They have to make a more serious signing if they're going to bring a foreign striker, if they're going to bring, you know, a foreign winger or something. And that's more on scouting and sporting director. I think Mosquera did the best with what he had and knows that, even though I you know, I disagree with how Mosquera treated the fans, his words is probably going to get him sacked, if not now, by the end of the year, because there's no taking back his words against the fans, against the sporting directors and everything. That there falls a character flaw in Mosquera. But aside from that, the team itself doesn't look terrible, like maybe some fans are saying. They need a little bit more. They need a little bit more work if they really want to compete in the international stage.
That's all right. Yeah, I think I agree. I completely understand. How Renato Fels and Sporting Cristal fans feel. It's not being one of the top sides in Peru and still finishing bottom and struggling to even get those 2 points. As well as, like you say, they were one result away from reaching the Sudamericana. So yeah, that's a difficult one to take. And there's definitely changes that need to go into how they're looking at their recruitment for a number nine. It hasn't gone as they'd hoped ever since losing Herrera. But we'll see what they can do. There'll obviously be changes. As Renato touched on, there's interest in other players like Castillo. Yotun's only on a short-term contract, so things will be changing in the summer, no doubt, or in the mid-year here. We'll have to see what happens with this squad going forward. Kevin, we're going to stay with you, buddy, and I'm afraid we're going to have to discuss Alianza Lima. I was at the first River game, the opening one, and it was a really, really decent defensive display. But there could not be a more opposite performance going into that final game. And a huge, huge defeat for your team, Kevin.
It's awful. It's awful. There's no way around it. It's the cherry on top to a bad Libertadores campaign. Like, the result is so bad that it overshadows every other Peruvian team in the Libertadores. You know, it doesn't matter that Vallejo couldn't beat an Olimpia, they couldn't sign players or anything like that. It doesn't matter that, you know, La U got beat home and away. It doesn't matter that Cristal couldn't beat a relegation side, Chilean on the side. Alianza was trash in this game. Alianza was trash. The players, they didn't want to be there, clearly. Don't get me wrong, River was always going to probably win this. 9 times out of 10, they would have won this. Maybe even with goleada. Maybe even a 3-0. But there was no fouls. There was maybe, all right, 7-6 fouls in the whole game. In a game where you're getting thrashed, you know? Alvarez has his contract with Man City and you know, where he could, you know, he already scored a hat-trick in the first half. You know, maybe you'd make him feel like maybe I should stop and sub out or something before, you know, some gets, I'm not saying violent, but, you know, marks their territory in the game. You know, just in general, I think Bustos did anything in this match worth talking about. This is a sackable offense. There's no black and white to that. It's 8-1 is a sackable offense. 6-1 is a sackable offense. It doesn't matter that it's against River in the Libertadores. It doesn't matter that Alianza is winning, you know, 7 games in a row in the league. When Alianza doesn't win this the title this year in the Peruvian league, Bustos has got to go. Unfortunately, I generally liked him, but it is a sackable offense. It's that big for the fans because it's a historic loss. Aside from that, as far as the players, it's hard to examine it, but I mean, Alianza made no signings that were worthy of a Libertadores campaign. I think the only player that even kind of stepped up was La Bandera, and that was mostly in the league. He's kind of changed the Alianza side so they could be more offensive, so they have another player that's good on the ball, touching. But I mean, there's not really much else. Ramos wasn't in this game, so you can't even blame him for that. You had basically the same defense that Alianza used for the championship, but they hadn't used in months. So it's just question marks all across the board. I'm sorry if this sounds like a little bit of a rant, but the result was that bad.
Yeah, it was hard to watch for a Alianza fan and a Peruvian football fan. I'm assuming it's a little bit easier for Renato to watch to see
that go down. There's a lot I could say on that, though. I mean, listen, this is just an example of why you should not have such a poor mentality when you're playing on the field. I mean, I mentioned before that Melgar's example of how you need to have a strong mentality when you're playing in continental competition. This is not the example. This is the opposite, the complete opposite. Like, we all knew that River was going to beat Melgar. I mean, not Melgar, Alianza Lima. The problem was, like, I was expecting 3-0 or 4-0 at most. But when it goes to 8-1-0, that's 8-1. This is a problem. Like, the fact that Alianza made no fouls to Julian Alvarez says a lot, that they just gave up by the point by the third goal. Like, and if for a team that's supposed to be the Peruvian champions, if you're coming in with a mentality like this, then I don't know what kind of game plan you have. Like, I don't know whose fault it was. I don't know if it was the players, but I don't know if it was Bustos, but everyone's at fault here. But it's interesting how, like, everyone says this Peruvian football, that's a problem. Like, I gotta admit, maybe we have to admit that Peruvian football is at an all-time low. And who knows, you can always say that Gareca is a magician, but man, this just result just brings up a bad like sign that some things need to be changed. And I say more importantly, like for every Peruvian club, is that if you guys want to compete internationally, all teams must be strong mentally. Like, it just shows you like how strong the psychological aspect of football is. Like, remember when Peru got trashed to Brazil in Copa America? I feel like that was because of like how like poorly prepared the players were mentally. Like, I feel like that's what happened with Alianza Lima. Like, these players were just out of it. They just didn't feel mentally prepared. Like, we gotta admit that River is just possibly the best team in the continent. And the gap just shows you. Like, if Julian Alvarez scores 6 goals, then it's either he's just really good or just the team just played terrible. I mean, I do feel sorry for Alianza Lima because I know they have some good players. Like, I just hope that for their sake, they would try to find a new like way to get back up. Would Bustos deserve to be sacked for this? I mean, listen, this is just a really bad result that absolutely shameful. I mean, then again, it's up to Alianza if they want to sack Bustos or not. But man, that just hurts to see.
Yeah, it's a hard one to watch, and it's difficult for Peruvian football. We can't, I guess, commenting on those fouls, they just couldn't get near River Plate to try and win the ball, even if it wasn't just to try and stop play. They just couldn't get near them. The movement was so fast, and Alvarez, well, if only he'd just gone to Man City already, rather than having his last game in Libertadores, hadn't scored previously, and all of a sudden he's got 6 in the bag. So, an absolute class talent that Manchester City will be receiving, and they'll be hard to replace for River Plate going into those knockout games. But let's leave Libertadores for another year. We'll come back to that next in 2023. Let's focus on the national team now. We've got our playoff games coming up soon. We're still obviously waiting on who that will be, Australia or the UAE. Gareca's got his team list out, and we've got getting prepared for our friendly over in Barcelona with New Zealand next Sunday. Kevin, pretty much as we expected, there's no chance really that Gareca's going to change things up after a long campaign that's got into fifth place. And it looks like this New Zealand game will be a good way of just getting prepared for a side from possibly Australia or UAE, obviously.
I think the way La Selección looked at this one is that New Zealand is not playing around. You know, they have also their international playoff match against Costa Rica. So they're going to go into this match series. And Peru needs that. We need a side that's going to take this match serious. It's not a friendly for either side, unless one side gets blown out in the first half. But going into it, both sides are taking this serious because this is serious preparation for the World Cup. They know that in, 2 weeks' time, 3 weeks' time, it's a wrap. They're either going to make it or they're not. So that's the kind of competition Gareca needed at the time. I wish it could have been more than one friendly, but sometimes organization is what it is. Logistics is hard. I think they will also be playing a local team in the Barcelona region. It's not Barcelona, but maybe some second division team or something like that. As far as right now, we have a good amount of the players already training at La Videña. They're playing against, they're sparring with the U20. I think they've sparred with some reserve sides from the Peruvian league. It's a start, you know, just to get into fitness, to work out some routines, to just get the Selección back into that fighting machine spirit. I think everyone's coming in good form. I think Avíncula is the only one that may be slightly injured, but he should be back in time for the playoff match. Aside from that, I think everyone's good. Carrillo's already training. Trauco's playing. Peña just won the Swedish Cup. Yotun's playing Libertadores. Tapia's been getting minutes. Abraham, you know, he played. I think he got made it to the semifinals of the Liga MX. Everyone's playing. Everyone's fit. And I think that's the best news that we have so far.
Yeah, I agree with you. It seems like a good idea to play a side like New Zealand, who themselves will see this as good preparation for them. Coming up against Costa Rica, the competitiveness of a friendly is quite often questionable. But when two sides are in preparation for an incredibly huge game for both teams coming after this, it really does help, doesn't it, Renato? And we can see Gareca has his side, he has his system, and without too many changes, the players know their role. But it's just about gelling back together again after being in club football for a while.
Oh yeah, I mean, this is it. Look, this is like in a few weeks, it's gonna be like a big moment for Peru to find out if they'll be in Qatar or not. And this friendly against New Zealand is a perfect way for us to get hyped up and for, like, the players to get prepared. Now, I'm actually quite happy with the call-up list. I mean, there's really no surprises, considering that if you know Gareca well, that he doesn't really like to change up his usual list of guys, especially in a type of like match days like this where there's absolutely no time to experiment. I'm happy with everyone that's called up, just maybe except for two. Cristian Ramos, I mean, I got to be honest with you, he's been in absolute poor form at Alianza, but at the same time, I do know, we all know that Cristian Ramos is somehow a totally different player when he's with Gareca. And even Raciel Garcia, I just don't understand. Like, he's not really been playing much at Tolima. In fact, he even struggles to get on the match days of Tolima. Makes me concerned about his, like, continuity there. Also, the fact that after the Ecuador game, I just felt like just shows me that he's not up to the level of a national team player. And I think there's players above him in Liga 1. But again, Gareca just has no time to experiment. And the one thing you got to keep in mind is that he likes to have his group. Like, no matter how, like, your club form is, if you're part of the group, for better or worse, you'll be in it. But Gareca has given, like, Peru results. And I think that's what matters right now the most for us, is that we get to Qatar. There will be time to experiment for players in the September FIFA date. But for now, I think the main goal is go to Qatar, because I think you can ask everyone this point that we want to go to Qatar. Like, and I was just hoping things go well for the friendly New Zealand. Most of the players are coming in good form. As Kevin mentioned, only Avinco might be a little questionable due as he is injured, but I do hope and I think he will be ready for the match against Australia or UAE. So yeah, there's a big few weeks coming up.
That's right. Yeah, a big few weeks. And I had the chance to speak with Dale Warburton over in Wellington in New Zealand, and he's been happy enough to talk to us and give us a little bit of a background on the New Zealand team. Hi, so I'm here with Dale from New Zealand, based in Wellington. Dale, how are you doing? If you let some of the Peruvian Waltz listeners know a bit about you.
Yeah, I'm doing really well. Just come to the end of our sort of our club competition over here in New Zealand, South Australia, and I guess it's starting to look forward to the intercontinental playoffs. That's coming up. What's that? Almost 3 weeks away or so. So yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah, not too long now, and the reason obviously we're having our conversation is because we've got a friendly warm up coming up in Barcelona on the 5th of June, before I believe you go on to play Oman in your second warm-up game, before you go on to play Costa Rica. As we're speaking about the World Cup, we should probably talk about the playoff we had 4 years ago and your experiences from that game. I believe you came over to Lima to watch the game. How was the experience for you?
Yeah, I was very, very fortunate at a good stage in my life where I had no responsibility, so I could kind of jump on a flight with very limited warning. But yeah, I think, you know, going into the fixtures, I thought, you know, we're going to be a very long shot, which is in some ways a bit of a nicer situation to be in, because you don't want to get your hopes up and have them destroyed by, you know, a last minute winner or something like that. So yeah, I think we did pretty well at that home league. Nil all, I think. Yeah, we didn't have that many chances, but we sort of, I guess, held our own a little bit. I think probably Peru probably played a little bit with them themselves. And then obviously, I guess going over to there, it was always going to be pretty tough ask to get any kind of result over there. And yeah, I had, I think, 3 or 4 days over there, and just absolutely fantastic experience. Just the noise, the TIFOs, locals are like really welcoming and trying to have a chat and all that kind of stuff. It was just more than what I expected it was going to be.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, and you got to enjoy plenty of the food that we've got over here. That's
well known for.
So I guess we're having this game, was probably quickly thought of by both nations to really prepare ourselves. Obviously, you're playing Costa Rica, and where the chances of us playing Australia seem relatively high, so it's a good way of for both sides getting themselves prepared. What do you think it is about playing Peru that could really help you, New Zealand, in their preparations for the game against Costa Rica?
Yeah, I think probably just the quality. I think the last, with COVID, the last 2 or 3 years we've barely played a fixture, and the ones we have we've been playing more recently in the last year or so, teams that have been knocked out of World Cup contention. So playing a lot of teams that are sort of 70, 80, 90, 100 in the world. So teams are well off the pace, a little bit like us. So it's really hard to get a gauge of where we are, I guess, internationally. We've done reasonably well against some of those teams, but they haven't really been at the level that you'd need to be to qualify for a World Cup. So I think playing Peru, obviously, did well in qualifying, and obviously, I think you're all like a top 20 team, maybe top 25, something like that. It will give us a good sort of challenge about see where we might be come, the game against Costa Rica.
Yeah, definitely. And I think for us as a nation, we're quite confident in our defensive abilities, and we're quite a counter-attacking team. And I think that's probably something you'll come across in Costa Rica. Obviously, they were unlucky to be in the playoffs. They're quite close to catching Mexico and the US in their qualifying campaign. So who is it amongst the sort of New Zealand team that Peru and more importantly Costa Rica should be paying most attention to? Who are your sort of game winners?
Yeah, I guess Chris Wood's probably obvious one. Plays for Newcastle and is in Premier League, and I think he was came into our playoff game last cycle slightly injured, so only played a bit part minutes. But he's one who give him half a chance and he'll put it away. I think problem for us is trying to create that chance for him. Usually that would sort of fall to someone like Sarpreet Singh, who's been previously on the books at Bayern Munich, but sort of playing in the second tier in the Bundesliga. But he's been ruled out with injury, so that's a big loss for us, because he sort of plays in that sort of attacking midfield role, sort of centrally, and we don't really have anyone near his ability in that space. So I think we'll probably look to go a little bit more, perhaps wider, and sort of fling in some crosses and sort of try... hope for Chris Wood to get on the end of one, because he's a tall guy. Elsewhere, at the back, I guess, Winston Reid, people might know him from West Ham days, currently without a club for almost a year, but is in great shape and is well above any of our other centre-backs in terms of quality, despite not playing any club games. He's another one who'll kind of lead us from the back.
Oh, excellent. And you mentioned there, obviously, of injury. Is there any surprises in your squad that you're, as a New Zealand fan, you were surprised to see, or is this what you're expecting going into the games?
Yeah, it's pretty much. I think, I think the only thing you could sort of question was maybe the third choice goalkeeper. But, when you get down to that, you've probably got, you're probably picking little fights there. So it's probably about as what most people expected. I think our depth is probably the best it's ever been, but on a global sense, that's still not a it's still not a great level, but so yeah, we've sort of got a sort of maybe a 20 players that probably pack themselves almost all the time, and then there's kind of maybe two or three that, or maybe six people that sort of fighting for those last three spots. So yeah, pretty much as expected, really.
Yeah, so we've got obviously a number of our listeners will be over in the States and around Peru, but may not know too much about New Zealand football on a domestic level. Obviously you've been the one professional side, Wellington Phoenix, competing in the Australian A-League. They've not been back, as we were speaking about previously. They've not been in the country for a while. How is let some of this know a bit more about Wellington Phoenix and how they've come to be competing in Australia?
Yeah, it's a bit of a long history, that one. I think maybe in the early 2000s, Australia sort of moved to a sort of I guess what you call a MLS type model, a sort of franchise type model. With sort of eight teams. One was a team based in Auckland, our biggest city. That team lasted two seasons before it sort of hit financial ruin. And a local businessman down here sort of saved, I guess, professional football in New Zealand and bankrolled the Wellington Phoenix since 2007. So yeah, we're the only sort of team that plays in Australia. So yeah, every second week they jump on a plane, fly at least 3 hours, sometimes over to Perth, which is an 8-hour flight to face the game. So it's a bit like, I guess, a Canadian MLS side, essentially playing in mostly an American league. And with the COVID situation, with sort of borders closed and all that kind of thing, they finished I'm trying to work out the end of the 2019-20 season, got paused for a moment as COVID hit, and then they went into a bit of a bubble. All the teams sort of played out of one city for the last sort of 2 months. And then the last previous seasons, the club's actually been based in Sydney in Australia, and have played, all but two games each season in Australia. They've briefly came back when the borders have opened, when sort of COVID's subsided for a little bit, and played a game in Auckland and a game in Wellington each season. So it's been pretty slim pickings for the last couple of seasons. So hopefully it sort of looks that the future's a little bit better than it has been for the last couple.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess that's probably affected sort of youth development in the country. And how is the sort of domestic football run in New Zealand? How are the games organised? And
it's very much a semi-professional league. So it's kind of divided at the moment. It's divided into sort of three regions. So the sort of the upper North Island, the lower North Island, and the South Island. So there's sort of three sort of regional leagues, and then the top basically 10 teams from those regions play off towards the end of the season as a sort of nationwide competition. So that system's only been in sort of two seasons. Obviously it's been a bit disrupted by COVID as well. So we haven't really had a proper season of that so far, and kind of see how that sort of plays out. But I guess previously we kind of had a national league that ran for 4 months essentially. So a very short competition. So it was a summer league and then sort of a more regional winter league. So it's very, very confusing. Basically all players have a day job. They'll train maybe some teams will train sort of three or four times a week. Sometimes it'll perhaps only train two or three. And then they sort of play. It's sort of shifted to a more sort of all-round, all-year sort of season that's sort of regional for most of it, and then sort of the national league towards the end of it.
So hopefully, that's the young players playing more regularly again can start to create more options for Wellington Phoenix. I guess the majority of the players will go through the Phoenix academies maybe, and then to other A-League sides, and hoping to go off to Europe and the US.
I guess one of the sort of the bright sides of COVID is it's been a lot more difficult to get overseas players into the country, and so there's been a much more reliance on sort of domestic players both in the A-League and also sort of in New Zealand as well. So definitely a lot more opportunities for sort of younger players, and the Phoenix have definitely, I think, a sort of stat that had the youngest squad this season in the A-League. and finished sort of sixth. They did pretty well with a reasonably young squad of quite a few coming through their own sort of academy system as well.
Yeah, oh, that's good to hear. So obviously you said the likes of Winston Reid, who's not had a club but has got this Premier League experience, which as a regular professional, you don't lose the ability. And you've got Chris Wood up there, who's been signed for big money by Newcastle to help them with their survival. With those sort of players coming up against the Costa Rican side, is there much confidence going into this as a country, or are you?
I think more confident than the last couple of times. So we had, you know, Peru last year, our last time, and then Mexico the time before that. So I think, yeah, a lot more comfortable, especially with the one-off game. I think that gives ourselves a bigger opportunity, particularly at the neutral ground. You know, it takes out the kind of travel factor, the home advantage, all that kind of, you know, temperature, humidity, all that kind of stuff kind of evens out. So I think it gives us definitely a bigger chance. I think our starting sort of 11 or sort of 15 or 16, I suppose, is pretty reasonable. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of Costa Rica, but I sort of understand they sort of pretty solid at the back and then sort of play on the counter, and they've sort of scored very few and conceded very few in their qualifications. So I think my big concern has been able to break those teams down, because I think when we've played teams like that previously in friendly games, we've really sort of struggled to do that. So yeah, but I guess the nature of a one-off game is you only have to do it once and you're through, or you don't have to do that and you go to penalties. So yeah, I think compared to previous times, a lot more confident, but I think, yeah, we're still, I think, pretty big underdogs, I'd say.
Yeah, that the whole one-off game has been sort of almost a controversial point, a decision in some ways to be going out to Qatar for these games. I know some fans enjoy having that opportunity to be able to watch their team play, which they're going to miss out on, I guess in these sort of times of hoping to come away from COVID, like things can open up again and like opportunities to see games in the future will happen. But
our last game was against Peru at home. That's how long it's been. So what's that? That was 2017. So yeah, it's coming up five years since we've seen the team at home. So yeah.
But yeah, they're quite a while, so, but hopefully how is the New Zealand support for the national team? Are they well traveled? Did you find when you came to Peru there was quite a lot of you that came across?
Yeah, there was a fair number. I think it wasn't much of a sort of a lead in time to do, but I think it was probably about 30 or 40 who sort of went over, and then there's a lot of sort of expats sort of floating around the world. So I know lots came down from the UK. There's a couple who were already in Peru and or traveling and stuff like that. So it's definitely, depending on where it's like, you know, there's lots of, you know, Kiwis living in the UK and stuff. So the European games, you know, there tends to be a sort of a group of number of people who sort of travel from the UK to those games. So I think there'll be a few people down in Barcelona and the West sort of in Qatar, I think, for the playoff as well. But just the way that travel is at the moment, I don't think there'll be many in sort of traveling from New Zealand to Qatar. It's just financially, it's a bit of a killer for most people, I'd say.
Oh, definitely. And yeah, I guess you're from New Zealand, quite a lot of places are a fair old distance to travel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I wish you the best of luck for the game. Hopefully we can see both of our sides going to Qatar for the World Cup later this year. Yeah, thanks very much. And if you want to let some of the listeners know where they can find you on Twitter, if they want to keep up, to make sure they can keep up with the news, what's going on leading into your playoff.
My Twitter handle is Warbz, so WARBZ and then FC. There might be much interest for my content, but feel free to have a nosy.
Oh yeah, well hopefully we'll be able to see some celebratory posts later later in the summer for you. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right, no worries.
Brilliant. Thanks. Thanks for that, Dale. Well, obviously, we'll be catching up more of that probably next week as we lead into that friendly with you guys. But we've got Liga 1 action once again this weekend. Some big ties coming up this week, Kevin? Anything that really jumps off the page to you?
To me, the biggest match that I've seen was Cienciano versus Alianza. It's Alianza at home after this huge match, this huge loss, and having sent some players to the national team, to the U-20s. So we're going to see what happens here, how Bustos tries to come back from this. And honestly, Cienciano seeing the open chance. Cienciano is the highest scoring team in Peru. It's the perfect moment for them to win away to an Alianza side. And then they have the three bottom teams in the league to face, mostly at home, I think, against, you know, Stein, Cantolao, San Martin. And it'll put them right back in the race, possibly, you know, fighting to the very end to see if they could win the Apertura. That's the one that stands out most to me, because if Alianza does lose this one, it's just putting, you know, Bustos' head right back under the axe.
Yeah, so it's going to be a very tough one for Alianza. It'll be a big test of their character, for how they'll cope with the cope of hosting Cienciano, who've been on such great form and such exciting players going forward, and really well organized team. Renato, what's jumping off the page to you?
Really, the title race and the Apertura title race. Melgar in great form, and I think so far they just lost one, but Alianza Atletico are also catching up. There's also Sporting Cristal. There was recently Sporting Cristal, which was quite an even match, though I feel like La U probably could have won this if it wasn't for like heroics from Renato Solis. And as Kevin mentioned, the next Alianza do have a big match to re-show themselves after a painful defeat in Libertadores. And as I was already mentioning, I just feel like if Alianza don't win their next match, I think the pressure is going to be totally, totally severe on Carlos Bustos. And yeah, and even Cienciano, I do think they can definitely see this as an opportunity to capitalize on this bad moment at Alianza. But really, I think like everything's just like even, like in terms of the Apertura race. Really, there's like, if you check out the table, there really is no huge gap between like currently the top four. And I guess it just shows you like the advantages of like of the decentralized league, of how competitive it is.
Yeah, this going back to being around the country has really added a little bit extra into the league once again, which has really made it very enjoyable. You touched on some of those games, Huancayo and Alianza Atletico playing each other on Monday, Melgar and Universitario. And we've got some big games at the bottom. Let's see, tomorrow San Martin kick us off against ADT, and San Martin got a win last week, Cantolao as well, catching up with the pack that were just above them. So we'll get to see if there's a little bit of a revival amongst those bottom sides. And we've given Ayacucho a lot of credit. They're actually sitting there third from bottom, level in points with San Martin. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Ayacucho have the weekend off with the changing the numbers of teams here. So it'll be interesting to see where they end up after these games happen. We'll wrap it up there. Kevin, can you remind everyone where they can find you, and any last words before we get going?
You guys can follow me at kmontalvo17 on Twitter. And I just wanted to throw that spotlight back on Alianza Atletico Sullana versus Huancayo. I just remember they're the second and third place teams. So no matter what happens, if there's a winner, Melgar is still going to be at the top. If there's a tie, they probably knocked each other out of the title race. So that one's a big one, if you guys can catch.
Yeah, that's going to be very exciting. And Huancayo still have that game in hand and are 4 points behind Melgar at the moment. So Alianza of Atletico, no, they need that win to keep the pressure on, but Huancayo will still be in the hunt as well for that win. So yeah, exciting one, that one. Looking forward to that. Renato, where can we find you? And any last words?
You guys can follow me at Renato_Sun on Twitter. A big couple of weeks coming ahead for the national team. And also, like, already were in like the twilight of the Fase 1 in Liga 1. The thing with how the World Cup is in like usually like in the summer, you think we'd be having the World Cup fever right now, but right now we're just like just trying to see the teams, the last few teams to be qualified. It's unusual, but I mean, we have to get used to this for this cycle, and let's just hope that things go for our favor.
Completely. It's strange calendar for this year, isn't it? But you can find me at Mike Rice in 1983 over on Twitter. Make sure you're following the Peru Waltz page as well. We'll keep you up to date with anything coming through, especially with what happens over this weekend. And we look forward to the build up for the New Zealand friendly next week. So, thanks very much for listening.
La defensa es colosal. González orlando la torre, Nicolás Fuentes y Chumpitas, Chale Mifrin y Cubillas y el gran Perico León, Bailón y Alberto Gallardo. Compre...